Welcome back, guys. DGS 405. So, Cardinals all over the place. getting killed and then walk-off homers and getting killed again.
Yeah.
And then a good win today. So, the team made a couple of moves.
Yeah. So, yeah, you talk about all over the place. I think that's where Cardinals fans are right now. They're literally all over the place. You want to think that something good is about to happen and then it doesn't, and then you get mad. And obviously the team is struggling. And one of the things one of the things that's a tell when a team is getting a little worried is you start seeing moves. And one today was common sense, right? I mean, Zach Thompson threw a lot of pitches yesterday, took the brunt of the 14-1 loss yesterday in relief, basically took one for the team, right? He wasn't pitching well, but they needed somebody to eat innings. So he went down to Memphis, no big surprise there because he wouldn't be able to pitch for another 3-4 days anyway. So he'll probably go down there and start, but they also sent Jordan Walker down, and it's the second straight year in April that they've had to send him down. Mm-hmm. And this April has been worse than last year's. So his start this year is worse than what it was last year when they sent him down, and he just got to figure out how to get right. When you dig into what's going on, it's the same problem as last year to a degree. He hits too many ground balls. He hits the ball hard. Let me look at it real quick. I got it pulled up. He's in the top 10% in Major League Baseball in how hard he hits the ball.
Hmm.
His max exit velo is elite, like maybe top 5%. But he hits the ball hard, but he hits everything on the ground. 50% ground ball rate just doesn't work. Those are outs in the major leagues. And when you look at how he's handling fastballs, one thing you have to do to hit in the major leagues is hit fastballs. He's hitting .125 against fastballs. And again, if you look at it, launch angle, which people hate to hear, but it tells you a story. His launch angle is 7 degrees. Those are ground balls. So when you want to know what Walker needs to do to get better, has to hit the ball in the air.
So,
and it's simple.
In general, because every player is going to be different.
Yes.
In general, how difficult of a fix is this?
Well, this specifically is not always that difficult, but the problem is everybody has habits that they've built up for years, right? So you're asking someone who has had nothing but success at every level to change because it's not happening at this level. And they don't, there's sometimes it's a physical, like it just takes a long time to figure out how to do what you're being asked to do. And sometimes there's a little bit of resistance. And I don't know if that's the case with Walker. I've not heard it reported or heard from the team that he's resistant to change. So I have no idea if that's it, but you have to, at some point, the results tell you what you need to know.
Do you think that we are rushing our minor leaguers because we don't have enough major leaguers?
I don't think that's the reason why, but yes, and I think but it's a common thing in baseball, period. It's not just the Cardinals. This is a modern trend in Major League Baseball, and part of it is because young players are cheap. They make the minimum. You don't have to spend $4 million on a 32-year-old guy to come in and be a part-time player when you can spend the minimum on a talented young guy who you think has the ability to be something special. And it's a league-wide trend. This is absolutely not a Cardinals thing, but of course it's the Cardinals.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, you got Mason Winn up. He's fine. He's doing just fine. He's hitting okay. He's playing great defense. So every case is a little bit different, but the trend in the last handful of years, last 5 to 10 years, has been when you have really good young prospects, you move them fast. And it may just be that this is a little fast for this particular player because every player develops at a different pace. So when I was on Derek Gould's podcast, I think it was last week, we were talking about this. And, you know, you have a guy like Jason Hayward, right? You may remember Jason Hayward when he was with the Cardinals. He's a similar guy to Walker in that he's big. He's 6'5", he's 240 pounds, great athlete, all that. But he never learned how to hit the ball in the air, so he's been a very erratic, inconsistent hitter for most of his career. Then you have the other side of that where Aaron Judge, who's one of the best home run hitters in the history of the game, is at age 21, still in college, not hitting home runs, right? Aaron Judge was a college player at age 21, and he hit 17 home runs in 3 years. So obviously not a lot because now he's hitting 50 a year in the major mm-hmm. leagues. And it took him a lot of time to figure out how to be able to do that against professional pitching and then eventually major league pitching. But he was still in college at the age that Jordan Walker is. So you had these examples of some guys never get it and they stay a certain kind of player. And in Hayward's case, he's a really good player, but he's never been an elite hitter. And in Judge's case, he figured it out, and now he's on track for a Hall of Fame career if he just stays healthy.
So what sort of actual things do Cardinals fans have to look forward to that could make the team better? For example, Tommy Edman's the only guy I can think of who is injured who could
and
come
Dylan
back and
Carlson.
Make a difference.
Yeah, and Dylan Carlson. And even that is moderate, right? I mean, Carlson was slated to be a fourth outfielder.
You know, I'm a Fermin fan.
Yeah.
I'm a Ciani fan.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're the answer to the 2024
no,
season.
No. I mean, look, Fermin's been killing it at AAA Memphis. I mean, for whatever reason, a guy that's never hit in his life is just destroying baseballs right now. So they called him up. He took Jordan Walker's spot. But I don't see a path for him to play regularly. I mean, he's an infielder. He's not going to play over Mason Wynn. He's not going to play over Nolan Arenado. He's not going to play over Nolan Gorman and Brendan Donovan at second base. He's not going to play over Goldschmidt. So I'm not sure that you're going to be able to take advantage of the hot bat. You know, it's partly why he's here, because he was killing it at Memphis. Unless they're going to put him in the outfield, which is something, to my knowledge, he's never done. The DH spot belongs to Wilson Contreras right now because his hand is still a little bit of an issue, so he's not going to catch very much until that heals. So it's really interesting to see. And Ciani, he's the only center fielder on the roster. So unless they're willing to play Nootbaar in center to chase more offense, you'll see Ciani out there. And I guess the difference between Ciani and Scott is that you're not viewing Ciani as a long-term prospect, so you're not holding back development. With Scott, if he's here struggling like he was, you're holding back development. He needs to go down and get fixed, where Ciani is more of a future role player.
I know it's early, so I'm not doing the whole, like, you know, Chicken Little, the sky's falling. But if we go back to spring training, before people were hurt, before Nootbaar, before Edman, how much worse are things than we had hoped that they would be?
I mean, if your record is reversed, so if you're sitting here at 14-11 instead of 11-14, so three games.
Okay.
If three games had gone a different route, you're perfectly happy. You're a winning team. You're probably right near. I mean, if you look at the Central Division, Milwaukee is better than that, but not by a whole lot. So if you're 14-11, you're basically right there with the Cubs and the Reds and the Brewers. People hate to look at it that way, but that's why you have to put it into perspective. Right now, you're three games off of what would make most people happy. So it's just the lineup. I mean, they need to score more. They need Paul Goldschmidt to hit. They need Nolan Arenado to hit for power. And if those guys were producing, maybe Jordan Walker doesn't have to go down. But because the guys that you're paying to produce, because they've done it for a long time, aren't producing, well, then you need more from other people. You can't have blank spots, which was what was happening with Victor Scott. Mm-hmm. And it's likely to be the case with Ciani. He's probably not going to hit a lot, but you're going to get the defense from him. Well, you can't have two or three spots in addition to your struggling stars. And look, Arenado has gotten better in the last week and a half or so, but he's still not hitting for the kind of power you need him to be based on his track record, based on his career.
How quickly would you expect Thompson to be back?
Well, it depends. It depends on how he does while he's down there. It depends on what they want. Do they want him to go back and be down there and be a starter, so that he could be an option if they need to replace somebody at the major league level? I mean, we saw Steven Matz yesterday struggle again, and he's not getting deep into games. Now, most of what Matz has been this year has been pretty good, but the big innings have gotten to him a couple of times. So if the plan is, let's just have Zach Thompson start, because you already have JoJo Romero as a lefty in the pen, that's your big boy at the back end for your lefty. Matthew Liberatore's been really good in the bullpen. You're not going to mess with that. And then you bring in John King, who is he's a fine, solid, average reliever in the major leagues. It's probably going to be, I would think Thompson will be down there until you need a starter.
And I wouldn't think that they would send Jordan Walker down for a couple of weeks.
I wouldn't think. No, I mean, look, part of this is also for his mental state, right? When you're a young player and you're really struggling, what do you want more than anything? You want to succeed, right? You want to be up there performing. When you're not, you're putting extra pressure on yourself. So in addition to, hey, buddy, we got to start hitting fastballs and not hitting them on the ground, we need to work on that. But you also need a mental break. You need to be able to go down and work and have less pressure to put up numbers.
You think that's because to me, I'm looking at it much more negatively.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it that you know, you've been a big leaguer for 2 years. Getting sent down is humiliating, and playing down there is embarrassing because you're a big leaguer. But you think that the guys are used to it.
Well, it depends. I mean, like, there, it could go either way with the player. It depends on how he chooses to look at it. He could look at it as a defeat and feel bad for himself and be mad that he's down there. Because, look, he had 400-something at-bats last year and in the end was a little bit better than a major league average player. And if you're him, you could make the argument to yourself, hey, I showed that I can hit at this level. I just need time. I'm in a slump. I'm in a slump to start the year. I just need time. If he's looking at it in the other way, you can say, man, I'm hitting .155 and I'm not hitting for any power. No home runs. You know, the slugging, he's slugging like a backup middle infielder. You know, he's not doing the job. This is a performance-based business. And when, and you have to understand, too, when you're Paul Goldschmidt and you've got a borderline Hall of Fame career already under your belt, you're not going down to the minor leagues. You've proven it. When you're 21, you're the guy that's going to go down if you're struggling that badly. And as long as he... I mean, look, he's going to be mad, right? Who wouldn't be pissed off if he gets sent down? I would be. Everybody would be. But if you get there and say, all right, time to go to work and get my way back, that's how it can be productive. But it can go either way for a young player. It just depends on how they decide to you know, fuel the fire. Do they want to take it and let themselves be beaten down? Or do they use it as the motivation to be like, all right, I'll show you I deserve to be back
so
up there.
Clearly the show is the show. But and I've never been to a Redbird game, never been to a Memphis game. Is it sufficiently impressive that there's not a giant difference, or is it a giant difference?
Oh, it's a big difference. I mean, it's a smaller stadium. Now, they draw well. There's a good atmosphere there. It's pro baseball. It's not like going down to A-ball where nobody's there and it's a little bit less. But it's also not... You're not being overanalyzed. If you go 0-for-8 over a couple of games, nobody's writing a column about it. Nobody's wondering what's wrong. You know, and
that's a good point.
That's the big difference. Is the only place
it allows you to work and not worry about failing so much.
And, right. So the only place that wins and losses really matter for players is in the major leagues. So if your team is winning or losing in the minors, that's not really that big of a deal. Nobody cares. I mean, the people at the game care. They want to see a win, but your bosses don't care. Mo doesn't care what Memphis's record is while Walker's down there. What he wants to see is Walker perform, and you're there to basically get yourself fixed.
One more question. Obviously, he's special. He's a Cardinal.
Yeah.
Do they have special people down there for him, or is it just the regular coaching staff in Memphis, and they're given the assignment of you got to get this guy to hit fly balls?
It can be both. I don't know if they have a plan, but they do have special instructors that are like roving instructors. People will go take a special assignment here or there. I don't know if they're doing that with him, but the hitting coaches at Memphis and Springfield and all the way down the line are running a similar philosophy to what you're doing at the major league level. So they'll all be on the same page, looking for the same things. Different voice, different person conveying the message. But yeah, I would think too with a guy like that, if they felt the need was there, you'd get somebody with him.
How close is the pitching?
The level of pitching, AAA to majors.
I mean, let's say that he goes down and he hits 800.
Yeah,
and then he comes back up and he hits .155 again. Is that not surprising because the pitching is so much less?
No, it's a big it's a big difference. There are plenty of guys at AAA that can pitch in the major leagues. But the difference between the stable major leaguers and the guys that go back and forth or the guys that are stuck there is the guys that are the stable ones, they don't make mistakes.
Gotcha.
And if you're only able to hit mistakes,
gotcha,
you're going to have a really hard time in the major leagues.
That makes sense.
Right. And if you can hit good pitches, like quality pitchers' pitches, and still get production, then you can stick around and put up numbers.
24 DGS on KMOX. Happy Wednesday.
Yeah.
Wow, Wednesday. That was truly a shot in the dark. I mean, it was 1 out of 5. But
yeah, you're like, you know, just finish in DAY and you're good.
Yeah, it wasn't Sunday, that close. You have a donut shout out?
I want to give a shout out to the Donut Stop on Lee Mayfair Road.
I've been to the Donut Stop.
See, I've never been inside, but I have Uber Eats'd them on a couple of occasions now. And every time I get it, they like draw all over the box.
They're cool. It's,
yeah, they're really cool. And their donuts are delicious. I got some on Sunday morning and I had a couple left over and I had them last night. These were like
nothing like a nighttime donut.
Well, yeah, and it's and they're like 3 days old, so I'm like, oh, these probably aren't going to be very good. They were so good. I was so happy I had multiple left over.
They are right across the street from First Missouri Credit Union.
Oh, well, there you go.
Open an account.
There you go.
Next time, well, next time you go down there, pick us up some donies.
Andrew, you need to get outside more. You've turned into a baby. Is this about the game today?
It was about the game today. It was everything about it. I was so we met up with our friend, Mr. Michael Kelly, there, and he drove us back, and I was so happy about that because I was dreading walking down there, and I was so dreading having to walk back.
But it's a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day out. But then when we got to our seats, which were lovely seats, it was like we were in the sun, so it was a little hotter than we thought it was going to be. And I'm just like, oh, it's so hot. I used to be such an outdoorsy guy, and I was in Boy Scouts and everything, and I loved being outside. And I still do love being outside, but I'm just such a like I'm such a wimp now when it comes to like any kind of, you know, the lessened comfort that comes from being outside.
You know what my humiliation from today was? So the other day I bought this hoodie, zip-up hoodie on Amazon, which all these guys love.
Yeah, it's nice.
It looks so good.
Greatest hoodie. And it was going to be, you know, chilly, but then warm. So, okay, I'm going to wear short sleeves. I'm going to take my hoodie. And it was immediately roasting like the fires of hell.
Yeah.
And so I took my hoodie off, and what I wanted to do was tie it around my waist. But then I'm like, then I look like Biff at Old Warson, who just finished the back nine. I'm going in for an Arnold Palmer.
Those are good.
Yeah, I love those.
Okay for a guy? I mean, I know it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Really?
Yeah, especially when it's hot. I mean, if you were doing it every day as a fashion statement, I might be like, let's reevaluate this. But if it's out of necessity, especially, it's fine.
I've never experienced a day like today where it was 91 degrees in the sun and 41 degrees in the shade.
We were straight up roasting inside. And then we saw Michael Kelly, and he's like, come sit in our seats. They're in the shade. So we did. And then it's like, I'm so cold.
Oh, it was not cold. It was so nice in the shade.
Wheeler paid $800 for sunscreen.
That's what I heard.
Like, okay, so listen, I'm the giant dumbass. I have been to Cardinals games. I don't know. Andrew and I were trying to figure out probably at least 400 games.
Wow.
At Busch Stadium. I should know where the sun is going to be and where it's not going to be on a day game. And I've got 77 bottles of sunscreen in my car for coaching stuff. Every weekend I'm using it, and I didn't think to do it before I get over there. I get over there, we're like dead in the sun. I'm like, I got to go buy sunscreen. Like, I'm going to go do that. So I went and did that, and I'm like, wow, that was a lot. But then again, it's really my fault.
It also, for being the biggest, toughest, having no feelings at all person, he's very sensitive in some ways. Like, he's like a little kid who doesn't like sticky stuff in his hands.
Oh, it's the worst.
And he was like, it's getting to my phone. It's getting to my phone.
It's the worst.
I got to go wash my hands. I'll be right back.
Dude, like the sunscreen that is like the lotion is the worst. I use the sprays. The sprays are the best. They cover everything. It's not all good.
See what I mean?
So now my phone's got it on there. My ears have it all over. It's annoying.
No, you've just been gone for like ever getting
you
the sunscreen.
You know how to defeat him.
Comes back, applies it, and then he, like Dave said, he gets on his phone. He's like, now it's getting all over my phone.
I mean, look, you can see there's
then he
smudges.
Jumps up and runs off, and we're like, okay.
There's smudges still.
Wash your hands.
Damn it.
Fine.
Man. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to, off topic, but I have the smudgiest phone ever. I feel like my phone is disgusting. I get embarrassed sometimes. I set it down around you guys, and if the light is reflecting off it, just the smudges and the dirt that's on the screen.
Wheels,
how does this happen?
Be honest. How nervous were you when Andrew borrowed your sunscreen?
Not really that nervous, no.
He only had like an ounce and a half.
Yeah.
Andrew's using it, and Wheeler goes, it's really like a one application kind of
well,
thing.
Well, no, he started to spill some. I'm like, dude, that's $5 right there you spilled.
I did spill a little on accident.
Wheeler's like taking one dot at a time and Andrew's like for 438 DGS. We talk a lot on the show and you guys in your general life about how COVID changed things. And I've talked a lot about how one of my biggest changes has just been time and how time feels different. And last night I was watching cable news and, of course, they were talking about the Trump trial and someone referenced, you know, back in 2015 and 16, we just didn't know that XYZ. And it struck me that if I really concentrated, I can trace back like, okay, in 2015, this happened. And in 2016, this happened. But as far as having a feel for it, 2015 feels no different to me than 1975. I have no, like, proximate memories, if that makes sense. Hmm.
It does. I mean, COVID rocked me for sure. I feel more shy. I feel more withdrawn because, you know, you just go through that period of time where you're not really reacting with people. I got to interact with you guys here at work, but that was it for several months. And then, you
That's
know,
no picnic.
Yeah, jeez.
No. It kept me sane.
Me and Tony and Andrew every day.
Hey, Sue was there and that helped. But you go around wearing a mask. You kind of forget how to interact with the cashier because you both have a mask on your face. It's just a whole thing. And things changed. And now we were just talking about this the other day, Dave. Like, yeah, you go around and people aren't really, you don't really see the mask anymore. Once in a while, you see someone wearing it. And you very rarely see any kind of COVID precautions anymore. We were so mired in that time, though, it felt like it would never go away.
I have to believe that China did not create the virus as a weapon, because if they did, they should do it again. Like, if we had COVID again, I think it would take us down. Like, not all the way to the ground, but oh my Lord, can you imagine a second round of this? We weren't that divided before. And it divided us so much weirdly over vaccines and masks and, you know, closing stores and things like that. And now we're so divided and we're so just itching for a fight. If we did have another real round of it, as bad as it was or worse, I really worry about how it would go.
I don't know. Do you think that even if COVID hadn't come along in 2020, something would have been the catalyst? Because we were obviously feeling some type of way to become that divided over I don't know. Maybe COVID was the perfect storm and that was the only thing that was really going to turn people against each other. Because you do get into like, it's your health, it's your personal freedom, it's all these different things that people brought up. But it just kind of felt like we were itching for something like
that. Yeah, I think it was building.
Yeah.
I think it was building. That was the trigger. That was the thing that set it off. I think it was building. I don't know how long. I don't know. I mean, do we trace it back to 9/11? Because we had that moment of peace there, but then it got ugly at the end with W, and then it was ugly with Obama.
In my mind, I was thinking, I wasn't sure I wanted to say it because I don't want it to seem offensive in any way because thousands of people died during both. But in my mind, COVID changed our country more than 9/11. 9/11 was a giant kick in the balls and, you know, just it changed so many things with our safety and the Patriot Act and take your shoes off and no longer feeling that the homeland is completely safe like it was for 200 years. But COVID, it changed the way people work. People lost loved ones that they never got to say goodbye to.
Your daily routine changed more.
Kids didn't go to school. They lost a year or two off of their learning. And we talked about this in the think tank yesterday, whether those kids were in first grade or juniors in high school, it just left such a mark.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, we could be talking about it every day. I think we're all trying to move on from it and do our best, but it's like a really bad divorce. And 5 years after your really bad divorce, sometimes you get doubled over in pain over it.
Yeah. It's clearly the most disruptive thing that's happened in our lifetimes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because it affected everybody every day for a really long time. 9/11 was scary for everybody, but it didn't impact everybody the same. You know, the people who lost loved ones, the people who worked in that area, the people who, you know, who were related to the first responders, that was more impacting them directly. But COVID impacted the entire country all at once, all the time. So while one was more shocking and violent, the other one was longer lasting and more divisive. But I just wonder, if you think about how history has played out, there's always something that precedes a problem that kind of showed you it was coming. You know what I mean? Get what I mean by that? Like, you know, you come out of, you know, a pretty peaceful time after World War II, right? It calmed down for a while, and then you get into the 60s and 70s, and you've got social disruption, you've got the Vietnam War and all those protests, you've got the hostages in Iran, and then you come out of that and it calms down again. But there's still a little bit of a build that, that leaves a residue, and each one you go forward carries all of that to the next thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And while COVID was the big one, it also came as the political environment was becoming more and more testy as it was, right? The end of Bush, that end of that presidency, and then into Obama, it was already ramping up, and it only got worse. And then once you get to, obviously, then you throw in the Donald Trump factor, and then COVID comes in and says, boom, this is the craziest thing you've ever dealt with. Oof.
I might disagree with you a little bit, though, Dave, as far as if we had to deal with a second COVID, even if it's not a disease, if it's, if, let's just say it's something that rocks us as hard as COVID did, I feel more confident approaching a huge event like that than I would have before COVID. Mm. And I was so scared when COVID first started. I was so uneasy, and the unknown was so terrifying. But the fact that we did somehow make it through, I mean, not everybody did.
You know,
but
though, what is it they say? A person is smart, people are stupid.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
I made that up just now.
Yeah.
Well, the wisdom of Dave.
I got another
put that
one.
On a shirt.
I got another one. Don't take any wooden nickels. I made that up just now, too.
There are wooden nickels.
I can just keep on going.
I wish you would.
I might.
Did people ever take a wooden nickel and go, dang it?
It had to happen.
I was warned.
Old movies would have you believe this was happening every other nickel that was being passed around.
Yeah.
Like, you were constantly getting swindled with wooden money, and then you're going, oh, man.
That and quicksand and cannibals.
Fooled. What sort of idiot is going to take a piece of wood and go like, thanks for the nickel?
Yeah, this the weight feels right here. This feels proper.
Been a while since idiot was used. This next that I have is apropos of absolutely nothing, but I just remember years ago when I asked the question, like, have humans been good for the earth? And everyone laughed and like, of course not. And then the one guy called and he's like, we're the masters of the beast. And I saw a video on TikTok where, you know, the planes where they can pick up the water and then they drop it on the fires. They were dropping thousands and tens of thousands of fish into a lake or a river to restock it. And I just thought, what a weird world. Like, if you were an alien and 10,000 years is nothing to you, it's like it's like a half hour sitcom. And you're like, come here, we're watching humans on Earth. And it's gone from like before we really figured things out, just fish were in lakes. And then sometimes they weren't because the bacteria got them or the lightning strike or a forest fire. But now we have these giant metal birds that we have can just stick tens of thousands of fish in and drop it in the lake.
Yeah.
What about from the fish's perspective?
Oh, my God.
That's got to be.
No kidding. Carl.
I can't breathe. Oh, okay.
Choking. Yeah, they get down there all like, WTF?
What's going on?
The hell was that?
Let's just agree to not talk about it anymore.
Where's Martha?
There was a bright light.
453 DGS. So, Wheels, it's official that Larry Blurd's coming to SLU.
Yeah, how about that? That was it came up over the weekend. It was expected, but like it became official this weekend. And we'll call him Robbie Avila occasionally, but I really like Larry Blurd.
I was just say, what is his real name?
Yeah, I mean, we'll call him Robbie from time to time, but Larry Blurd is a great nickname. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is good, too. But Larry Blurd is better. And they also brought in another transfer, too, who was one of the top scorers at Indiana State. So this is two really high-end quality players coming into SLU with the head coach.
Will people, and I know you're not on the inside, but will people necessarily lose scholarships? Like,
well, some guys had already entered the portal. Like a bunch of SLU guys entered the portal at the end of the year anyway. So
that's, now the only reason to do that is to move up, though, right?
Not always. Sometimes it's
move down and play more.
Sometimes it's I don't know the new coach, and I want to see if there's a chance where I could go play more or play somewhere else. So it's a bit of a mixed bag because when a new coach comes in, you don't know if that's going to be a fit for you or not. It may be, it may not be. And a lot of those like Jimerson is staying. He entered the portal but decided to stay, and some of those guys will probably stay also. But that's a normal thing right now when there's a change. Guys, just go see what's out there, see what their options are. So
how much
but
better,
good to add two real legitimate impact players.
Realistically, how much better could they make us?
I mean, quite a bit. Like, win the A-10 better. Like, Indiana State should have made the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
And would this be a similar team?
It's hard to tell because it will obviously be a little bit of a Frankenstein. You'll be mixing a lot of guys. But bringing over two of the best players from the other one sure wouldn't hurt.